It's really nice. I just wanted to make sure you guys were like excited for this because Kim came here. She has 9 years sober and she's going to share her story with us. So it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Kim.
Good evening. My name's Kim, and I am an alcoholic, and welcome everybody. I have 9 years and 3 days sober, and thank you. And thank you for introducing me, and I thank God for allowing him to bring me to you guys this evening, and thank God for keeping me sober on a daily basis. Just a little information. I don't do well in front of crowds, so this is something that I'm not very comfortable with, but I guess that's part of my sobriety, to share my experience and hope with you guys. So the old saying is give it away to keep it, you know, and I never really understood that for quite a few years. You know, whatever I have, I wanted to keep it. You know, why would I give something away, you know, to somebody that I don't know? Through the programs, working with my sponsor, I definitely understand that that little saying, you know. A little bit about me. I grew up in the Bay Area, and I played soccer all my life from the age of 5. I played, you know, semi-pro soccer, college soccer, so forth. Coached college soccer, and you know, I shouldn't be an alcoholic. You know, you know, an alcoholic to me, as I was growing up, was some, you know, an old man and a trench coat and a paper bag and whatever inside that paper bag. You know, and through my whole life, I really wasn't even comfortable in my own skin. You know, I was a prisoner in my own skin, and even doing things that I loved, and you know, being around the sports that I loved so much, I wasn't comfortable even with the groups that I hung out with. You know, and I just never understood, and so it was a lot easier for me to. As I got older, I never, you know, started drinking until I was in my early 20s, and I found out after I would have, you know, a beer or two, I would, you know, loosen up, and I wasn't the type of person that would go to a bar and, you know, dance on the tables or anything, but, you know, going to a barbecue, friend's barbecue, I would loosen up and I would feel much more comfortable with myself, and I would, you know, mingle with more, you know, with people a lot more than if I didn't have a drink inside me. And it just continued, you know, I had to finally be honest with myself. People asked, you know, well, when did you start drinking? Well, in my early 20s, when did I really start having a problem? Was in my early 30s, you know. Going to parties, so forth, you know, some beers or whatever, and it was no big deal. But it was really after I got married. I got married in 1991, and I was afraid that, you know, always afraid of my husband being mad at me for some reason, and so I always thought, you know, we'll just take a couple shots, that would help, or so forth, you know, and that's the way I lived my early adult life, you know, after we were married. But, you know, stepping back into my childhood, I grew up in a normal childhood. You know, I have two sisters and a brother, and you know, the only abuse my parents would give us is my dad would give us a silent treatment when he was mad at us, you know, and that silent treatment could be, you know, two, three weeks, you know, even rolls in even to a month maybe. But other than that, I mean, we had a normal childhood, so why would I become a, you know, a drunk? I have no idea. It just got a hold of me and it wouldn't let go. You know, I was the type, like I said, I'm not a bar drinker. I would hide my liquor, you know, and I would go skiing, and snow skiing, and I would actually I drilled holes in top of my my grips, and I would pour peppermint schnapps down my poles, you know, so that way I would have, you know, drinks the whole entire day, you know, but I had to make sure that I maintained, you know, which drink, you know, which one I was drinking to make sure it was, you know, always the same, you know, the same weight pretty much. So to me, that's hiding, you know, I always hid my liquor. You know, when my husband and I, we bought our first boat, and we would go skiing, water skiing, and we'd be on the boat, be drinking beers all day long, get home, wipe down the boat, I would continue drinking those beers. And I gained a lot of weight, and until I found that one commercial, it's the vodka and the Diet Coke, you know, and that was my savior, you know. I started drinking that, the weight started coming off, and I started feeling really good about myself again. Yeah, people are asking, you know, why was I losing so much weight? And I just said, you know, I stopped drinking beer and everything. And so, nobody really knew I still had a drinking problem. And again, I always hid my liquor, you know. And my daughter was very involved in softball, and I would fill a water bottle up with whatever I was drinking at the time. Again, it's usually, you know, it was the Bacardi and Diet Coke. And I would drink out of the backpack of that all day long. You know, go in the bathroom, go in the outhouse. You know, I always have my little backpack, you know, and that was my purse, basically. And the, you know, the water bottles were always in there. You know, and I have that sneaky, you know, sneakiness, you know, in me. And to this day, I still do. You know, it's just not liquor for me. I got so drunk one time at the softball tournament my daughter was having. I got home, I drove home. I always drove and drank, always. Got home, and again, my parents didn't know, and I felt so sick when I got home. I actually brought my dad out to the garage, and I admitted that I was an alcoholic. I had a problem to my dad, and he says, if you don't stop now, it's going to ruin your life. And that was around 11 years ago, 12 years ago. And that's when it started really tumbling down. You know, I stopped drinking the Bacardi and Diet Coke, and I started going to the vodka because, you know, you don't smell vodka, you know. Well, that's what I thought, you know. My husband's in the construction field, so, you know, he would always tell me that, you know, the painters would drink vodka, you know, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to drink vodka then, you know, and it looked like water, you know, so it's even better yet in my water bottle, right? So, again, my life just kept on tumbling down and down, and we were living up north, up in the Sacramento area, and my husband got relocated with his job, and he moved here, and he was here around 9 months, and the girls and I were still up north. I have two daughters. I'm kind of jumping. I should have shared that. I have two daughters now, the age 24 and 21. And they stayed there, and they finished up their eighth grade year, the oldest one at the time, and then the other one was in elementary school. And then right before I moved here, my pancreas started failing because of my drinking. And talking about a lot of pain, that the pain was, you know, I just said I had the flu, you know, and we sold our house. We were staying at our neighbor's house while the girls were finishing up their last, you know, few days of school. And she actually ended up having to take me to the hospital, and I was in a ICU for several days because of my pancreas. Didn't even realize how bad I was, you know. And this disease is baffling, and I asked the doctor, you know, after they gave me pain medicines and everything, you know, I was feeling pretty good. And I asked the doctor, you know, my daughter's graduating from junior high school. You know, can I leave the hospital just for a couple hours so I can go to the graduation? I promise I'll come back. Well, obviously they didn't allow me to go, you know, but that's how baffling this disease is. You know, you really don't, you know, think that it's really hurting you. And all of a sudden, that pancreas just flared up. So I stopped drinking for a couple weeks, and I started back up again. And I started learning how to that feeling of my pancreas flaring up. I would slowly, you know, I would stop for a few days, and then I would play that game, you know. And we moved here. I started going to the Alano Club, and it didn't help. And my husband was trying to do the best thing for me, and he said, you know, I want you to go to rehab, and I had no idea what that was about. He was trying to find me the best one, and he reached out to his uncle because his uncle had several years in recovery, and they thought they were doing me a favor, you know, finding a nice facility where there's nice people, and they're not, you know, in trouble, you know, with the law or anything. It's just, you know, they have a drinking problem, you know. And so there's a facility up in Fresno, and so I went there, and went there for a month, and our bank account went way down because of that little rehab. Our insurance didn't cover it, and I was, my last Thursday of before that I got out of that 30-day program, I was already thinking about when I was going to drink again. You know, even though I didn't have anything for like those 28 days, you know, that Thursday I already thought, you know, okay, you know, I'll give it a couple weeks when I get home, you know, see how the family is, and then I'll start my drinking again. And so I did, and it just continued going down, you know. And by that time, you know, my daughters didn't care for me that much. They knew everything going on, and I went, you know, another year, and you know, I would go in and out of the Alano Club. You know, the door would swing both ways. I would pick up a 30-day chip here and there, and then played the same old thing again. You know, we went, you know, he took me back to the 11th hour in Fresno, and I did the whole cycle again, you know, the rehab, and it didn't work, you know. And I got out, you know, a year went by again, and then my kids really hated me. You know, they didn't want anything to do with me again, you know, still, but even more so. You know, they were asking, you know, my husband, why don't you divorce her, you know? And he's like, I'm not willing to give up on her. And so several months went by, and I would get up in the morning, and I would take that. See, we had some plants in our house that took distilled water. So I had a reason to have water, a water bottle underneath the sink, right? So I would start my morning out grabbing the water bottle underneath the kitchen sink. And I had a water bottle, but then I had my vodka bottle that was, it was the water bottle filled with vodka. Sometimes I got confused which one is which, so I had to shake it. Whatever one bubbled up was my vodka. And I would have to take a shot or two just to start my day. This is how my day went every day, starting 6 o'clock in the morning, and just so my hands wouldn't shake, so I could sign that piece of paper that my kids need me to sign to go to, you know, for, you know, something for school. And I was the alcoholic that, you know, I'll do it later. I push it off, like most of us all have done that in the past. So I would have to take a couple shots to be able to, you know, have my hand stop shaking to be able to sign that piece of paper. And I did that for a while, and then my body would even reject those first two shots. and I would start throwing up the first two shots. And then finally that third shot went down, and it hurt when it went down, but I had to have that. That's how sick I was with my alcoholism. You know, it wasn't fun anymore. I didn't go to a barbecue anymore, you know, one or two beers. It was, you know, shots and shots. It was hiding bottles throughout the whole house because I was going to get to it later. It was the bills I was going to get to later. Receipts, I would keep receipts for no reason. And my husband went through the whole house when I was in rehab and found all these things. You know, when I was in the hospital, back up, I ended up going to the hospital again for my pancreas. So I was in ICU twice because of it within a couple of years. When I asked him to bring me some things to the hospital, he opened up a suitcase, and there was big jugs of Bacardi in there, empty. You know, I was going to throw them away later. I was a closet drinker. You know, literally sat in the closet, and I would drink my drink, whatever it was. You know, and at this time, I didn't want to socialize with anybody. You know, when we were selling our house up north, I hid from our own realtor as we were trying to sell the house. I would see him drive up. We had a two-story house. I would look down, he would be driving up. Well, I've already had shots in me, so I can't converse with him, you know, because we know him on a personal level also because of softball. So I wouldn't even answer the door. And who knows? We could have sold the house much faster, but I'll never know that. You know, when we moved here, I thought, you know, it was a good thing when we moved here because I would be able to go to Allen AA and nobody would know me, and I wouldn't have to be ashamed of being an alcoholic because nobody would know me because everybody knew me up north in Lincoln where we used to live, and I that's why I didn't want to go up north to any of the AA meetings because I was ashamed of being an alcoholic. You know, my mom told me one time, you know, Kim, if you had cancer, wouldn't you go and get treatment for your cancer? Yeah. And she goes, you have a disease. You know, your meetings and your, you know, working with the sponsor, it's a disease. That's your treatment. You know, and I never understood that until I really got into the program. You know, finally, enough is enough with my husband, you know, and he kicked me out of the house. My parents traveled full time. Here I am in my early 40s, and I got kicked out of a brand new home, nice home, two semi-healthy children, marriage going down the drain. You know, took away the car keys, took away the house keys, you know, took away the credit card, so forth. Kicked me out of the house. He called my parents and he says, "You better come get Kim, or next time you're gonna see her, that she's gonna be dead." And they really didn't believe it until they pulled up, and they traveled full time in a fifth wheel. So I ended up living at a trailer park for several months. So they were trying to get me into another facility, and outpatient for a while. I did the outpatient for a while, and my dad would drive me to the outpatient in the afternoon. Again, I'm in my 40s and I'm doing this, and here I am. You know, I used to be, you know, pretty decent soccer player, and you know, my life is just all those things that my dad told me was going to happen when I told him in the garage I was an alcoholic. He told me all those things. Well, all those things were coming true, you know. And I would tell my dad that the outpatient program started at a certain time, and he would drop me off. He dropped me off a few minutes early, so that way I could run down the liquor store, grab a bottle before my outpatient meetings, and that way I had a bottle for the evening when I was living in the trailer at the trailer park with them, you know. And like I said, here I had a beautiful brand new home, and I'm living in a trailer park, you know. We played that game for several weeks, and then my dad found one of my bottles. Again, I hid everything, and at the end, I didn't hide it very well. Hid it in his golf bag was one of my spots. You know, he wasn't going out playing golf, but he was questioning, and it was in September, and it was raining. Not like the weather we're having right now. And he's like, at night, my bag will go from one spot to another. And I didn't understand why, you know. And I don't know why I moved it, but I moved it every night. And another spot was behind the washer and dryer at the trailer park in their little laundry room, you know. So, you know, I that's the way my alcohol was. I hid it. You know, and I was a loner. I didn't want to have anything to do with anybody. I didn't have any friends. And like I said, my husband said, enough is enough. And he said, if you don't go someplace to get help, I'm seeing a lawyer tomorrow. And that's the very first time I decided. It was on the corner of Chenoweth and Goshen. And I went on my mountain bike, so that way I didn't have to walk places because he took the car keys away, right? Let me back up just a day before that. Day before that, after my parents found the bottle, I was at my dad dropped me off at oh no, my dad was at the Alano Club with me in a morning meeting. And we got back to the trailer park, and there were, at the time, my Debbie, my sponsor Debbie, and then two other gentlemen there to say, you know what, your parents called me and called us, and enough is enough, and they want you to leave the park. And I don't know if you know some of you probably will know Richard, the cowboy Richard, you know, that he lives in Idaho now. So he, you know, always went to the Lana Club, and I think he's been to this meeting before. Anyways, I literally fought this big cowboy guy at the trailer park. Literally fought him. I mean, I was hitting him and everything. I was yelling at him, so I got kicked out of a trailer park even, you know, and so anyways, I took off and I walked and, walked around, and finally, you know, I said, bring my mountain bike, and he brought me, my husband brought me my mountain bike, and that's when he told me, if you don't go and get help, I'm going to see a lawyer tomorrow. And I said, okay, I've had enough. And my sponsor let me stay at her house that night, and that next day, I went into New Visions in the detox room. And that was September 25th of 07. And the beds were full. There wasn't any available beds except for the detox bed, and there was a waiting list as well. And I was in the detox bed. I was in detox for a couple days, and I said, "This is it. I'm done. I'm completely done. I wasn't going to play this game anymore of thinking, okay, when I get out, I'm going to start drinking after a couple weeks or whatever. You know, this is it. You know, I've lost everything, and I don't want to lose my life." So God started, you know, started the cycle. You know, I gave up. You know, my way wasn't working. And I've never understood the God concept. I never went to church as a child. And even as an adult, I barely go. And I don't understand it. All I know is somebody was working for me. Somebody was watching out for me. And a bed opened up in New Visions. And since I was in the detox bed, they actually put me in a bed. And I jumped that waiting list. And I got in that in one of the beds. And that's what I needed. I didn't need, you know, being only seven people in a rehab facility that, you know, they were business people. They were, you know, whatever. I needed people that just like me. I was a drunk, and I needed to be with the people that I got along with, the people that I felt more comfortable with. And every one of those girls, except for one other girl, they came right out of prison into New Visions. So there are 16 of us, and there's only two of us that chose to go on our own. You know, and again, I drank and I drove every day. And when we were up north still, and we were having our house built here, I would come down every other weekend. We would switch off, my husband and I. And I had, again, I had a bottle between my legs, going down 99 every other week for 9 months. And I belonged exactly where I was New Visions with all those girls. You know, because I should have been in prison with them. You know, and grace of God, I never hurt anybody. And maybe if I would have got a DUI, maybe this whole cycle would have started earlier. But I guess I lucked out on that aspect, you know. And I never got in trouble by the law. But remember, I was a prisoner in my own skin. You know, and I felt that way for a long time, and I finally could say that I don't feel that way. You know, I feel free. You know, so while I was in New Visions, my family started participating in the Al-Anon and Al-Anon program, and I had a 48-hour pass, and it was cowhide time. And I went home. My husband picked me up from New Vision on that Friday and came home, and he worked out, and then we were going to go to the game. My oldest daughter at the time was a sophomore in high school. The other one was in junior high, and we were about ready to go, and my oldest daughter needed a ride over there first because she wanted to go before we did. And so I took her over there with her girlfriend, and we were just ready to leave our house to go to the game. And we get a call, and it's the police. And our oldest daughter was drinking at the cowhide game with vodka in the water bottle, you know, just following her mom's footsteps. You know, it was watermelon vodka, if that mattered, but I never had that. So to this day, I've never had watermelon vodka. And we went to go pick her up, and, you know, I've grown in this program, and our family has grown. And my husband would have been so pissed off at my daughter for that. But we went to the game, and we went to Redwood, and we picked her up, and we got in the car, and we said, first thing, you know, my husband's like, you know, well, we need to get you some aspirins and everything, and, you know, you're going to have a headache. And she's like, oh, I already took some. So, you know, I was ahead of the game, you know. But he would have been pissed. But with him going to Al and I think that really helped, you know. I finished New Visions. I volunteered at New Visions for a couple of years, and our family continued growing in this program. You know, I tell my sponsees that, you know, you think you're hurting yourself when you're drinking, you're hurting everybody and yourself, everybody around you. And I always say, you know, you think it's a me program, really turn up me upside down, it's a we program. You know, because if it wasn't for my family participating and understanding my disease and accepting for who I am, and they are proud of it, you know. My daughters are proud of it. Before I actually surrendered to this program, my youngest daughter would go to the Alana Club with me all the time in the meetings. And a few of you know my youngest daughter. And she would go to meetings, and we went to a speaker meeting one time, a book study meeting one time. And I brought my big book because I wanted to read something out of it. You know, I got up and I had to go to the bathroom, and I came back, and, you know, we continued reading out the book, and then a couple days later I was reading the book at home, and it was 2007 that she wrote this. We love you, but we don't like the choices that you made, but all the family loves you. This is somebody that she was, you know, 12 years old at the time, you know, and they loved me. But they didn't like the choices I've made, you know. And in the book it says, in time they will see that you are a new man, you know. And my family has seen who I am now, you know. Fast forward, you know, 11 months sobriety. I lost my best friend since third grade, my children's godmother, of breast cancer, and I was 11 months sober. And the first thing I did was I got my ass to a meeting. I went down to the Lionel Club, and I parked myself down there, and I stayed down there for a while, you know, because that's what people told me to do, you know, and that's the first step I've experienced. Why I was, you know, freshly into recovery, you know, during the time of my 9 years, I've I watched both my children graduate from high school, and I didn't have to say, "Doctor, please let me out for a couple hours. I promise I'll come back." I didn't have to do that. And again, my daughters, they're proud of who I am, and I think my daughter went to the meetings with me to make sure I would go to the meetings. Obviously, she didn't have to go to the meetings. She went to the meetings. My husband didn't tell her to go to the meetings. She went to the meetings because she wanted to make sure that her mommy was going to the meeting, And like I said, both my daughters have graduated from high school, and I was able to see them. And I didn't have to have my backpack, full of a water bottle full of vodka, And talking to everybody, right now, I would usually have a couple shots before because I would be so nervous about talking about, my past. And I don't have to do that. And it's okay for me to feel uncomfortable. I've learned that that's okay to feel that way. In the meantime, moving forward, last June, I watched my oldest that drank that, water, that vodka out of the water bottle at the Cal High game. I watched her graduate from college, freshly new into my recovery, my husband said, if you need to divorce me so you could solely focus on yourself and your recovery, then you need to do that because I want you to live. And I didn't have to because this program taught me how to balance my life. My recovery is number one before my marriage, before my children, because if I don't have recovery, I'm not going to have my marriage. I'm not going to have my children. And this November, we'll be celebrating 25 years of marriage. And I didn't have to divorce him so I could, concentrate on my recovery. Like I said, in June, my daughter graduated from college, and my youngest one graduated from high school in 2013, and she went away to college in Colorado. And November 2014, she had to come home because she has epilepsy since she's been 2 years old, and her seizures were getting so bad. So we started doing, a few of you know this story, brain studies at UCSF in San Francisco, week-long brain studies, several different times. Different type of procedures, so forth. And August, she had brain surgery, and I didn't have to drink over it. She had two, August 31st and September 4th. 21 years old, she had long, beautiful brown hair, and they shaved her head, And I didn't have to drink over it, And my husband and I had to have that terrible talk of if something would happen during her surgery, would we be okay? And would I be okay? And that's the last thing you want to ever have to do is have that type of talk about your children, with your spouse. But we did. I was sober. Again, I didn't have to drink over it. Today she made, my girls are so proud of me, but I'm proud of them, as I've shared, and she maintained three classes, online classes, while she was going through that and her brain surgery. And she was in the hospital for a few weeks after her surgery. And she maintained and got on the dean's list. And she was able to transfer to Sacramento State. And she started Sacramento State this August. And September 4th, she celebrated a year of seizure-free. Which is, she's on one more medicine. They took her off one medicine. She's on one more for another year. But, age of 2 years old, always been on medicine, and seizures every day. And now she doesn't have a seizure, She has a normal life. She's going out every night. She joined a sorority that is good for the community. And she didn't want the sorority that, you have to do all that drinking and everything. She found a sorority that does a lot of good for the community. And and self-esteem for young girls, and they just gobbled her up when they told her, you know, she told the story about her brain surgery, because she's one tough young lady, you know, and you know. Sunday, I was out of town when my 9 years was, and I give my chip away every year. You know, I give it away because I give it away so I can keep my sobriety. You know, and every year I give it away to somebody that means a lot to me, and this year I gave it away to my old sister that was very supportive. That 2 years ago, we did not have a relationship at all. At all. We didn't even talk to each other. And I called her about something regarding my youngest daughter, and we started communicating. And my sponsor told me a long time ago, just keep on praying for that relationship, and one time it will happen. And it finally happened. You know, my sponsor said she had seen three of me. She had seen the one that came into meetings, drank before the meetings, drank during the meetings, drank after the meetings. Another one, the second one is after I got some sobriety in me. I shut up and I listened, and I just shared every once in a while. That first one would just talk and didn't even make sense, not passing a message on at all. And the third one is who I am today, you know, and hopefully I, you know, when I share, I pass the message. You know, I completely believe in my higher power. I don't understand, like I said, but I'm not questioning it because it's working. You know, and it's a team effort, I feel, all the way around. You know, I fully love the Alano Club. That's my home group. I still go 4 to 5 times a week, you know, in the morning. And it's real. It's really sad when the chairs are almost empty because I know the disease is out there. You know, and people just aren't coming to meetings anymore. I could see the change in 9 years in, you know, AA. I could see the change, and it is sad. But all I know is I can't stop going because it'll only take one drink, and you know, I'll get drunk. And we like going to Chili's, and right when I started my recovery, we would go to Chili's. My husband would order a tall Coors Light, and he would drink all of it, and then he would get up and go to the bathroom. After a while, I noticed he would drink some of it, and he would get up and go to the bathroom. He started believing in me. You know, he could leave that glass half full there. You know, and I share this with a lot of people that, you know, if I take a sip out of that, well, he won't know at first, but he'll find out because that's not going to be the only sip I'm going to take, you know. And so if I take a sip, that bench that when he left, he got up to go to the bathroom is empty. And I take a sip, that bench is going to remain empty because he's not going to be with me anymore. And eventually I will lose my life because the drinking will just, my pancreas won't have it anymore. But if I don't take a sip, he's going to come back and we're going to enjoy the evening. We're going to go home the next day. Everything starts all over again, you know. I always say you have 9 years, but you know, 9 years now. But you know, I have today, and that's the most important thing is today, and the friendships, you know. And I'm so grateful that you know my home is so close to meetings, and it only takes me a couple minutes to get to a meeting. And my husband would say, you know, if you need to go to a meeting, because my lips would just flap constantly, you know, I would always talk a bunch of crap, but I never did, you know, actions speak louder than words thing. So he goes, you know what, go to the meeting, call me when you get there saying, hey, I had to leave, I had to go to a meeting. You know, actions speak louder than words, and I finally realized that. You know, I don't know what it is with my family, but I have a older brother and a younger sister now in the same disease. And I see exactly the things I did, they're doing. And the only thing I do is pray for them every day that they finally, you know, they get the serenity, you know, through this program. And my brother's in the other program as well, but they get the serenity that I did, you know, and the friendships that I've made through this program. I could actually say that I'm proud to be an alcoholic, because I think being alcoholic has helped me help others, and it helps me being myself. You know, and I find, like I said, I finally feel comfortable in my own skin, and I don't need to hide my alcohol anymore, and I don't need to drill holes in a ski pole to put my my drink in the ski pole so I could go drink, you know, and I could be around the alcohol and it doesn't bother me a bit. You know, and my daughters are very cautious with their drinking because they know my youngest doesn't like to drink anyways. But my oldest, she's very successful in her career now, and she knows she's just better watch out because it's just in the blood, you know, and they're very proud of me, and I could actually say I'm proud of myself. You know, you always say, you know, look in the mirror. I used to hate myself. You know, and today I don't feel that way. Today I could actually say, I'm loving myself today. So thank you for hearing my story.